Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you have joined us. We're going to talk about scheduling today, workers and their jobs and when they're told when they're going to work. Large employers have used software algorithms to schedule part-time employees for more than a decade. Precise scheduling helps businesses reduce labor costs and match the number of workers to the number of customers. But labor advocates say the software has made already inhumane scheduling practices that much more widespread. Some employees have to call in or even go into work every day to find out whether or not they're working. If business is slow, workers can be sent home after only an hour or two, and hours can vary drastically from one week to the next with little notice. A movement to curb irregular scheduling is now afoot. Several cities and at least 10 states, including Maryland, are considering legislation to require employers to give workers more notice of when they are to work. A bit later, we'll hear from Mike O'Halloran, Maryland State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. But first, Lonnie Golden, Professor of Economics and Labor-Employment Relations at Penn State University, Abingdon College, will help us understand the impacts of irregular scheduling and the pushback against it. He joins us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Professor Golden, welcome to Midday.
Really glad to be here with you, Sheila.
I'm very glad that you are. Why now? I mean, as I understand it, part-time workers have had irregular, unpredictable schedules for a long time. Why are organizers rallying around this effort now?
Well, I think there are two factors. One is that we've had 70 straight months of job growth. And so we're turning our attention to the quality of jobs and the effects it might have on our non-work lives. The other is that it's probably intensified. Yes, it's true, this has been present in retail trade and other industries for a while, but we're seeing this used much more almost in real time.
For lots of different kinds of businesses?
Yes, I think it's present in all kinds of industries. It's mostly present or more intensely used in retail trade and, like you mentioned, some of the big retailers, but also in food service and production and in cleaning services. It's always been present, but I think it's creating more havoc than it used to, also in part because we have fewer labor unions around to protect workers from this that used to get this in contracts. We get like you say, continuing advances in the technology, which makes this possible. And we have, realistically, strong and even hyper competition in industries such as retail trade, where consumers are real sensitive to lower prices. And the ability to predict when customers are going to be in the store or when they're not, and the technology that facilitates it allows at least some workers that don't have other protections other than the law that we're here deliberating about, that they can be called in on short notice or sent home on very short notice.
The very first phrase you told me, 70 months of growth, made me think, what impact did the recession, the Great Recession, have on this trend?
Well, it's hard to say that directly, but employees, particularly in the low-wage spectrum, probably don't have much bargaining power to begin with and basically have to accept jobs that don't have the kind of stable schedules that they would prefer. There are some workers that don't mind coming in on short notice, like you said at the beginning, calling in or being sent home without the pay because they have to attend to other aspects of their lives, like caregiving or student work. But there are some where this short notice is going to be a direct conflict. And there might have been a time where that was maybe more acceptable as an aspect of the job. But if there are other job opportunities available, then employees are speaking up a little more. And what some of the laws that you mentioned that are being proposed are trying to provide is a right to request changes in their schedule, more advance notice, et cetera. So they're speaking up more. And they have some advocacy groups that are allowing them to speak up more about this issue that when we're in a recession or recovering economy, that we're less apt to push against, that we're more apt to accept as part of the job.
Tell me about the scheduling software that many employers are now using. What does it allow them to do? What does it take into account?
That's not exactly my area of expertise. I would refer you to my colleagues, Susan Lambert and Julia Henley, that looked at this with the Employment Instability Network that I'm part of. However, we do know that they can get a pretty close tracking of how many customers are in the store at a given time, and also a prediction of how many customers, if it's a store or a food outlet, how many customers would be coming in given the weather outside, given the day of the week, given the hour of the day. So that's not necessarily 100% accurate forecasting, but then get a pretty good idea of what causes that to fluctuate. And so they can make a real-time adjustment, let's say overnight, in how many employees to ask to be present at a certain time or ask to go home at a certain time on pretty short notice.
Is this mostly used by big corporations, or do small businesses use it as well?
I think bigger ones are the ones that are going to, there's more at stake to time the work schedules to the actual demand for the service available at that time. It's more on an informal basis in the smaller businesses, one would think. But I think the software is not that prohibitively expensive. And as some of the representatives of the software companies, they understand that this can be used for good or for not good, and are sensitive to this being used only for the bare minimum cost minimization that some companies might want to adopt. So it could also be used to not only match customer service with the number of employees present, but can be used to compare against what happens to sales or what happens to turnover and what happens to absence of employees. So it's just one aspect of the technology. I think those of us that do the research and those who, on the advocacy side, try to expand the scope of employers' time horizon to a longer term rather than just the day-to-day fluctuations, and understand that there's cost involved in the longer term if you send people home on very short notice, call people in, or as you mentioned before, there's a staggeringly high percentage of employees who don't know their work schedule unless they actually go physically to the workplace, at least in certain industries like fast food. And so it can be used to keep the cost at a minimum, which we all benefit from as consumers. But there are ways to implement that which are also a little bit more employee-friendly.
That is economist Lonnie Golden here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. We're talking about the trend, so-called just-in-time scheduling, in which part-time workers are given little advance notice of their work hours. Is your schedule up in the air to the last minute? How do you manage childcare and doctor's appointments? Tell us about it. Send us an email to midday@wypr.org or give us a call at 410-662-8780. If you're an employer, are unpredictable schedules, in your view, just the nature of your business? Again, you can call us, 410-662-8780. Professor Golden, I want to pick up on just where you were talking about having a longer horizon, looking at impacts. What are some of the impacts on employees of this kind of scheduling?
Well, on the employees themselves, there is going to be two ways in which these effects might translate. And it's pretty clear, at least when we look at some of the national data, when you ask people about the regularity of their work shift, the more irregular on call it is, the more they tend to face daily work-life conflicts, including caregiving time. It also leads to, in certain cases for certain employees, greater fatigue at the end of the day, and the kind of things that might impact indirectly their performance, things like fatigue, things like daily work-family conflict.
You said that's on the employees themselves. Is there any data that tells a picture of what you mentioned turnover a few minutes ago? Is this likely to push employees out of the workplace or push them out of that job?
That's It's been pretty well documented that turnover rates are higher or can be reduced by introducing more scheduling stability. But turnover, of course, is something that has to be measured over a period of time. So if a company is more conscious of that and maybe they don't underestimate or discount the staggeringly high costs of turnover to some businesses and some industries, they'll underestimate the importance of that. So yes, there's some evidence that provides what we call the business case, that it's in business's own long-term interest to minimize turnover and absenteeism and tardiness by introducing more stability in scheduling, or undermine their efforts to promote retention of employees for the longer term, have minimum tardiness and absenteeism if they adopt a more humane type of scheduling, or involve workers' input into their own schedules. There are a lot of case studies, not so much in these national data that you might be prodding me for, but there are a lot of case studies where firms have introduced this and found that their turnover rate did go down substantially.
I'm sorry,
and
when
they just have to,
when companies introduced
the scheduling, more scheduling stability or more choice for workers. If you get higher job satisfaction out of employees, they're more likely to stay, they're more likely to perform better on the job, they're less likely to search for other jobs either while they're employed or to, like you said, eventually even move to another company or another organization.
Is there any data to put around a conversation about what this kind of scheduling does for the overall economy, or does it hurt the overall economy because of the instability of the workers who are scheduled this way?
I think it does so, and in very subtle ways that are going to be hard to pick up. One is that when it makes people more uncertain about their incomes, so in particular, we're talking about the instability of work hours for those that are paid by the hour. So in certain parts of the year, their schedules can fluctuate to as many as a full-time work week to as few as single-digit number of hours in a week. So when people are working and they don't know what their income is, then that creates a level of uncertainty and insecurity that leaves them either to not participate in the labor force anymore as the more extreme measure, but in the short term to not spend money or to spend money they don't have or don't eventually get and therefore incur greater debt. The other way in which this undermines economic recovery is the particular instances when people are not called in when they expect to be working, or when they're sent home during the day without the scheduled shift length that they thought it was going to be and therefore take home less money. So that's a situation that we're examining at the Economic Policy Institute, of which I'm a research associate. That's a situation we call underemployment. And what we're experiencing right now for the first time, I think, since we've been tracking the macroeconomic data, is a chronic level of underemployment, people seeking more hours, being willing and available to work more hours, but not getting those hours. And so they're not getting the income levels that they'd be preferring and being willing to sacrifice more time to do that. So that puts sort of a cap on how much people and households that they live in have the ability to spend and keep the recovery going.
So again, that would be part of what you call a business case, why employers should look at this.
That's a good point. Business case usually focuses on the impact on their own costs in the longer run. But if businesses also need to be persuaded that they need more sales, sometimes we need to do that too. And so, yes, it brings more customers in the store who are willing to spend more and be willing to spend maybe at higher prices if they had more spendable income to do that. So what we have found is that what is chronically higher than in previous macroeconomic situations is the proportion of workers who are working part-time hours that say they'd be willing and available for full-time. So they're working in part-time jobs temporarily and for their long-term plans temporarily. But those are precisely the type of jobs that are most prone to this scheduling instability, not only in the timing of work, but in the number of hours and therefore the take-home pay from that. So we haven't yet reached our level of full employment. If we have a proportion, it's about 6 million people still that are not working as many hours as they prefer, and a big subset of that, almost from a third to half of that, are people that are in part-time jobs, which are prone to these fluctuating in hours and not taking home as much pay as they'd be willing to work for.
We have to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hear some of my conversation with Mike O'Halloran. He's Maryland State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, and we'll continue talking with economist Lonnie Golden, who studies labor and work hours. We want to hear your experiences with part-time work and irregular schedules. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. You can call us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about erratic work schedules across the country. Labor advocates are rallying around legislation aimed at making schedules for part-time low-wage workers more predictable. In Maryland, a bill before the General Assembly would require that employers provide schedules at least 3 weeks in advance. If the employer decided to make any changes with less notice, it would have to give the employee an hour's pay called predictability pay. And if the employer cancels a shift after an employee has already shown up for work, the employer would have to pay a portion of that shift. Similar legislation died in committee in the Maryland General Assembly last year. I spoke yesterday with the Maryland State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, Mike O'Halloran. I asked O'Halloran what he thinks of the proposed legislation.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, our members are telling us, and actually I dare say that this is one of the most dangerous pieces of legislation for the small business community.
Explain that.
I mean, it is essentially saying, you know, the government knows best how to schedule your workers. So if you just follow this 3-week timeline and don't run afoul of it, you'll be okay by us. But if you do, that's where we get involved. The Attorney General can get involved, the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, and we can levy fines and all that stuff. And quite frankly, this concept of 21 days in advance, it's just simply impractical. I mean, and not just from an employer standpoint. I dare say that if you ask a majority of employees, you're going to hear a lot of them that they're going to say 21 days in advance. That's crazy. I can't imagine my manager or my supervisor being able to do that, because simply this idea is void of any reality that a small business owner faces when trying to schedule their employees. And we're talking about scheduling requests, vacation time, you know, whether it's a busy time of season for retailers, you know, around Thanksgiving and Black Friday and certainly Christmas time, but even for, you know, our employers out in Ocean City or even in Western Maryland up near Deep Creek Lake and Wisp Resort. I mean, these are seasonal employees, so there's just so many variables that go into scheduling, and this bill doesn't account for any of them.
Okay. Is there something less than 3 weeks, but more than a few hours?
I don't think that's the issue. Quite frankly, our members see this as a non-issue. What this bill does is it doesn't account for an employer's, quite frankly, their right to operate their business the way they best know how. And obviously the biggest part of that is being able to schedule employees the way their business needs it to be scheduled.
Well, do you see any equity issue here? Do you see any problem from the workers' point of view?
Oh, absolutely.
For having such
short
employees,
notice? You know, it complicates how they request on and off of certain shifts.
No. I'm asking a different question, I think, than you're starting to answer, although I'd like to hear that at some point. But first, I want to ask you, the current situation in which employers can schedule up to the day of and can send workers home saying, turns out we don't need you after all. Do you see that as unfair to workers?
I think the problem, the bigger issue is that if an employer does do that, it's not out of any punitive reasons. They're not telling, you know, Joe or Susie not to show up because they don't need them. They're obviously telling them not to show up because the work just simply isn't there. I mean, the phrase, you know, you can't get blood from a stone comes to mind. Listen, if in a restaurant, again, we'll go with restaurants, if it's a slow time of season And, you know, the numbers just haven't been there. An employer needs that flexibility to tell employees, hey, listen, I can't have you in today. I apologize. We'll go ahead. We'll get you squared away in the next schedule. But, again, to penalize them for that, to say, listen, we're going to make you pay an hour of predictability pay, or if it's within 24 hours, 4 hours of predictability pay, where do they think that money's going to come from if it's not there to begin with?
Let's zoom in on the situation of a worker actually showing up for a scheduled shift and being told, nope, not going to happen.
Well, the same principle applies.
Why should that burden be on the worker who paid for transportation and made arrangements to come in?
Sure. Well, then hopefully there's an employer there who will say, listen, I apologize for you, you know, coming all the way in. Let me pay for that bus fare.
But
again, it's the principle of, you know, if an employee shows up to work and the work is not there, it's an unfortunate set of circumstances. But again, you can't make up the funds if they're just not there. You can't make up business if there's no business to be had.
That was Mike O'Halloran, Maryland State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Lonnie Golden, an economist who studies labor and work hours, is still with us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Professor Golden, what's your reaction to Mike O'Halloran's arguments?
It's nothing we haven't heard before, especially when you focus the attention on just the small business owner who's beleaguered by high cost and overregulation. But I think we're beyond that. And essentially what he's arguing is that any business owner has the right to people's time and pays no compensation for that. I'll tell you that there are a lot of jobs, and some of them are quite skilled, that do come with what we economists call the compensating wage differential. It's realistic in some jobs that your work is going to be on call or there's going to be sudden changes in shift times. But especially if you have a salary, that salary is somehow marked up in the labor market because people are willing to take such a job with those conditions because they pay a little bit better. What we've seen is this kind of condition has been pushed onto the relatively lowest level of employee that's part-time or hourly, relatively young especially, early career, and that there's no such compensating wage differential for them. So what he's making a case for, probably unwittingly, is a case for a minimum standard or minimum floor so that businesses won't be able to get an advantage over other restaurants, let's say, in their industry by pricing things cheaper, by putting all the burden on the shifts and fluctuations in business and customers all onto the employee. What the bills are proposing that you probably were going to suggest is that there should be some minimum advance notice. I do not want to be prescriptive about that, but I can tell you that when we ask in national polls, it's something on the order of 43% of workers have not even a week's notice. So it's mostly on certain workers, this burden of the scheduling uncertainty. And if we can address that with just some minimum standard, like doesn't necessarily have to be 21 days, but a lot of those folks would be probably very pleased if they could get maybe a full week scheduling advance. Moreover, I think it's really crucial to have that pay incentive or cost incentive from the employer standpoint. That is to say, if they get called in, and like you mentioned in the interview, they paid for transportation, they paid for daycare or some sort of childcare coverage, and they go home without any income, that's really not an acceptable situation, especially in a strong economy. And there should be maybe what we call the predictability pay, where if they change shifts and shift times or make an adjustment on short notice, let's say within 24 hours, they owe the employee an hour of pay. And that's it. It's not saying practice is banned. It's not saying that that you have a new regulation that can't be afforded, that you have to hire people to maintain this. It's just that they get an hour's worth of pay. Or if they show up, they get paid for part of the shift length for which they were scheduled, even if you send them home early. So I think it's really crucial to get that into the accounting, into the formula, when employers decide how many people they're going to send home and whether it's worthwhile to send them home or not, or call them in on very short notice.
We have quite a few people who want to join this conversation that I'm having with Lonnie Golden, an economist who studies labor and work hours at Penn State. This is Midday on WIPR. You can join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Ed has called from Rosedale. Ed, welcome to Midday.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to point out that in discussing the problems that the workers have with these kind of scheduling in their personal life, also many of these part-time workers, especially the very low-paid ones, work more than one part-time job. They're working two, sometimes three part-time jobs. And if their employers use these techniques, it's going to wreak havoc for the employers as well as the employee.
So, I'm sorry, so you're saying that the kind of scheduling that's being proposed would be a bad idea?
Well, yeah,
or the current scheduling.
If you've got three employers and they all want to call you on a moment's notice and expect you to show up, it would work a whole lot better for them to have you as a reliable employee if you could have some advance notice from all three and juggle them properly.
Professor Golden, you want to comment on Ed's point?
I think Ed brings up a really interesting point, which is that employees aren't just going to not react to something like this. So if in a given week they are not getting the kind of hours that they were seeking, and this happens perpetually, that they're going to seek another job. And in the older days, people would have a situation they call moonlighting. They had a day job and a night job. And you could know with some sort of predictability or stability that you'd have these timings that wouldn't conflict. If you're taking two part-time jobs in fast food or in retail, or you're doing transportation type of jobs, including in the gig economy as it's now being called, that there's an increasing probability that the work schedule will conflict. And it puts employees in a tough situation. And as Ed suggested, it also puts the employers in a situation they're not used to, which is they're fighting for the same employee for the same block of time of work. And this is rather new. And what the other thing that's rather new to me, studying the labor market for a couple of decades, is that employees used to hide their second jobs. Now they're very out about it and say, you can't schedule me on Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday because I'm working for some other employer. And that is really unusual. And I think it's an outgrowth of this kind of practice. So it puts an employee in a situation where they have to choose between the two or not show up at one or quit the other job. So I think if you have a minimum standard where the employee has some say and some input into their schedule, and that is somewhat protected so that they are not legally allowed to be biased or retaliated against, and say that please don't schedule me on these days I have classes, please don't schedule me on this day I have another job, I think that would advance this tremendously, especially if we could enforce that. But just to have the Wild West out there where people are in real time saying, can you come in now, or they get a call in the morning. I've had this discussion with students, and they say that, you know, they're getting texts that to come in to do different places, and they got to pick which one. Or they're not getting any texts at all, and they have to decide what to do with their day that they already blocked out for work. I think what we want to do is curb that just a little bit, so that we reduce the likelihood of these conflicts.
Connor is calling us from Lutherville with, I think, a different point of view. Connor, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do I understand that you own an IT company?
Yes, that's correct.
And your comment?
My comment is, I completely understand where employees are coming from when you talk about, you know, it does ruin their day. When you ask them to come into work and they can't work for whatever reason, and you don't have to work for them. On the same token, if they don't like the volatility of a particular job, it's a right to work state. They can absolutely leave, go find another job that has the structure that they're looking for. You know, some employees love, you know, having a flexible work environment where, you know, it's sometimes late, sometimes early, sometimes in the middle. Some days we may not have much on you, then you have an open day to do whatever you feel like it. Some employees like that. Some employees don't. If they don't like that, there are plenty of jobs, I feel, out there that have structured schedules with guaranteed time that, you know, they can go towards. And if it's a company that consistently does that to employees, and I don't think it's right. We don't do it to our employees. But if there's a restaurant, let's say, and they consistently don't have hours for their staff, it's very easy for the staff to go, well, we don't want to work here anymore. Let's go find another restaurant to work for, and the restaurant won't be in business anymore. So the problem solves itself.
The problem solves itself, Connor says. Connor, I appreciate your putting that on the table. I'm having a hard time saying that your view of the economy matches mine, but you're in business and I'm not. So, Professor Golden, what do you think about that?
There are some situations where the problem would solve itself, yes. And Connor, I think, brought one up. In the IT industry, when there's a perpetual labor shortage, they don't want to lose their employees. There's a strong incentive to retain them and to give them the schedules they want and not play havoc with their lives, because they want them to be satisfied with their job and be high performance and let them have some say over when that work is performed. What we're talking about is in areas where there's not a labor shortage, where there's more labor surplus, and we're saying the nature of those jobs are starting to replicate what might occur in some other higher skilled sectors, as the nature of the work that is somehow compensated in the labor market or by the employer. And we're talking about regulation, sort of minimum standards for those that don't have that kind of protection that they'd receive in a tight labor market. So I don't think this legislation would necessarily affect employers that are already doing this because they want to be a good employer, because they need to, because they're interested in retention and minimizing those other labor costs. But we're saying is create some sort of floor for the people that, let's say, that Connor mentioned, that quit or started looking for other jobs and find that they're all volatile schedules. And we're, as economists, trying to explain why the participation rate in the labor force is not growing in a growing economy. And that might be one aspect of it, is I can't take a job because I'm trying to raise a kid, I'm trying to stay in school. And if I take one of these available type of jobs, I'm going to be in a lose-lose situation. I'm either sacrificing one or the other. And I'm not saying people should not take a job because of that, but it's not surprising if some people just go without it.
Connor, I appreciate your call. We have to take another break here. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Lonnie Golden, professor of economics and labor employment relations at Penn State University Abingdon College. We're talking about the widespread practice of telling part-time workers their schedules only days or hours beforehand. If you're in this situation, how has it affected your life? Employers and managers, we also want to hear from you, as we just heard from Connor. If a predictive scheduling bill were to pass in Maryland, what would it mean for your business? Join our conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm talking with Professor Lonnie Golden, an expert on labor-employment relations at Penn State Abingdon College. We're talking about work hours. Increasingly, it seems large companies are scheduling their employees to precisely match customer flow. The result is a more efficient, less costly workplace for the employer and an erratic, unpredictable schedule for the employee. Do you see a workable solution to this problem? Join our conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Diana has called us from Baltimore. Diana, welcome to Midday.
Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I am a small business owner. I have two small businesses. One's an environmental consulting company, and then I also manage rental properties. And I think the piece that I'm not hearing today is that economic principle of what is best for one is what's best for all. If I, as an employer, want good employees, I've got to be a good employer. And people are not respecting that basic principle of what it is to be able to live a life with some dignity. And I know that there have been times when I've had to pay employees for a couple weeks when I don't have work for them, because I know I'm going to need them. And if I don't keep them available to me, they have to find other work. And that's in my best interest, but it's also in their best interest.
Professor, I appreciate Diane, I appreciate your making this point, but Professor Golden, we hear so much about very, very thin profit margins in some businesses. Is the attitude that Diana is describing feasible in many sectors?
I think you could ask her that. It sounds like it is. You can take a hit for a week or two and still survive because she said she wanted to promote retention and treat them humanely so they'd want to stay with her two companies. And I think that's the kind of responsible employer behavior that you can't legislate, but they find in their own self-interest. We're probably focused a little too much on the small business, proprietor, and less on where these schedules tend to occur the most, which is in large corporate chains. And there's pressures within the organization from the top down to the floor managers to minimize labor costs on given days or even within given hours. And that's where the temptation to not take into consideration what Diane just mentioned is going to be the greatest. So that's where, with a minimum floor that says that you have to provide maybe a week or two's advance notice and have to pay if you change your schedule at last minute or call them off, you owe a couple hours of pay, that's where we would think this is needed the most and would have the most bite.
We got an email from Diedrich. I'm not sure where he is, but he writes, "I'm a small business owner. How about other small businesses stop whining about unpredictability of workload and start planning for their workload? Small business old-time thinking leads to current sloppiness, and it unfairly comes out of the working staff's life. Some of these same business owners tout family values, but I suspect it's their family values, no one else's." That's from Diedrich. Karen is calling us from Hunt Valley, I think with a different take on this. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I see it from the point of view of the employee. It is very frustrating to do that to someone. It's rude, and that employee would probably find another place to work. But the other side is the employer. Most employers that I have worked for are the ones that will keep. If it's a good worker, they would never send them home. It's the workers that you can't rely on, the ones that aren't really doing well in the job, and it's a tight labor market for an employer. It's very hard to find good, reliable, consistent labor. And therefore, the good ones keep their jobs and they keep the hours, just as Diana had said earlier.
Thank you, Karen. Professor Golden, what do you think of that?
Well, I think the last two callers make a really interesting point from the perspective of employers. They have their own self-interest of keeping not only all their employees, but particularly the good ones. I think what is not being picked up is what on the employee's side is quite often is they agree to work the extended hours or agree to be available short notice because they fear that if they said no or refused that they would be considered a not reliable employee. And in a way they are. But what that does is shift the burden to the employee and to the household of which they're part of this instability. So, yes, we all want to be judged as good employees, and I can even say I do the same at my own job. I make myself available when asked. But there is a cost that for some are much more severe for saying no, and they might be signaling that they're a good employee, but they just bear the burden through other types of conflict in their lives, in their time, if they continually say yes or continually make themselves available on short notice.
Nathan is calling us from Cockeysville. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Hello. So I really deeply sympathize with the problems the workers face in this situation, but I disagree that it's to be solved legislatively. This is the sort of thing that unions should exist for the workers to organize and work with management to define their own per industry, per business regulations, limits, notification problems. If there's any impediments or retaliation or problems keeping unions from being strong, those should be addressed.
Nathan, interesting point. Professor Golden, how does that strike you?
It resonates with me very strongly because I think traditionally labor unions have protected workers against these type of scheduling. And there's all kinds of examples in collective bargaining contracts. But we're in a situation now, even though it's stabilized, we still have only about 1 in 9 workers that are members of unions in the private sector. That's more like 1 in every 11 or 12. So what do you do for the vast majority that don't have a labor union? And as he suggested, there are like still a lot of legal impediments that prevent unions from organizing some workers, like in these low-wage, especially the part-time workforce. So what do you have for them in the meantime is some sort of legislation which, and I have the same instinct, I don't think you can legislate this good behavior and this good outcome as effectively as we might want, but in the absence of that, it'll be a race to the bottom. So what we're trying to do by suggesting their basic principles of a legislation is protect employees from the kind of practices that would lead to this wild instability, and maybe protect employers from themselves or the competitiveness of their industry that in the long run is not even in their own self-interest. So I don't think you can legislate exactly what you want, but if you provide a minimum floor and if you're trying to institute a process, which is hard to legislate, of communication, that's very hard to implement and to enforce, but it sets a norm that not only union but non-union workplaces can pattern themselves after.
But is there a risk that passing legislation, setting a minimum, as you describe it, will essentially have a reverse, a backlash reaction from employers who say, this is too much of a burden, there's paperwork involved, and it will actually end up with a worse situation?
I'm really sympathetic to that, as a matter of fact. I think when we write legislation, we want everything to be put in writing and that there's a track for this for the lawyers to follow. And nowadays, this is really hard to implement, that you make a request in writing, that you have to respond in a certain number of days. But in the absence of anything, you're going to get this lowest common denominator. And I think that's kind of what we're up against, as to what do you do in situations where this scheduling can be done for certain segments of the workforce on such short notice without any sort of pay at all. And if you introduce in the discussion that it will cost the employer to continue this across the whole industry, not just that one employer, that on balance, I think we're going to be better off, and that we do have a much more fuller employment economy, and we do have this absence of labor unions in the background, which requires that we do something legislatively. And that's why it's occurring state by state, local government by local government, and there's legislation proposed in the Congress, is because this is a relatively newer development and we don't have the institutions that we used to have before that would reliably protect the most vulnerable workers from these type of practices.
Tom is calling us from Baltimore. He wants to talk about scheduling and healthcare. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm driving, so I hope I don't break up. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make you aware that it doesn't just happen in the low-wage industries. I'm an RN, and it happens in professional fields such as nursing in that, we'll call about for 4 hours here and there, and sometimes people are forced to use their time, their vacation time, sick time, thing like that, and just want to bring that to your attention, not just the low-wage jobs where this is happening. And maybe that's an area where you could look into as well.
Tom,
Thanks for taking me.
I appreciate your calling. Be safe as you drive. And so I'm not going to ask Tom a follow-up. Instead, I'm going to ask you, Professor Golden, nurses seem to be in pretty short supply, and yet we all expect that nurses have to cope with shift work. It's the lack of advance that seems surprising.
No, I think Tom brings up a really interesting point, which I tried to allude to before, that's going to be the nature of some jobs. And you understand that's part of the employment relationship. Having said that, registered nurses have some leverage. They are in a labor shortage situation in many areas of the country, in many types of jobs within nursing, and the hospitals or the employer doesn't want to lose them. So they get a shift probably well in advance, and then it has to be altered on relatively short notice. But you could argue that there's some sort of compensation in the nursing pay that accommodates that, and that there's a expectation or there's a right to refuse. There are certain states now that have a right to refuse overtime hours because in many situations, nurses could not abandon patients, and they'd have to work overtime. So hospitals begrudgingly started to add staff, which is what we could do also at businesses level, to add staff. There's a little bit of a buffer if someone's got to stay late or if someone's got to leave early, that you can still get coverage. So nurses are one example that traditionally has had such short notice working time and fluctuation. But it's and there would probably benefit from some of this legislation if they didn't have some advanced scheduling or some pay. But it's also a situation where they have pretty predictable shifts, where they have some input, particularly for your senior employee in nursing, over their upcoming schedule. And sometimes they're well more than a week's advance notice. It could be 4 weeks or more. Or they know what a regular schedule is.
We are very...
So, yeah, we stomach this as part of certain occupations.
We are very close to being at it. Just a couple minutes left. And there are two emailers who I think deserve to be heard. So let me read these to you and then give you a quick chance to react. Benjamin writes, the system the businesses are using to regulate employee hours would work fine if employees were able to find alternate work for hours that they don't go into their current job. However, that scenario is impractical. So there should be a minimum time frame where employers are notified of their schedule and the number of hours that they will be able to work. The current system is creating great efficiency for businesses, but decreases efficiency for individuals and families. And then Alice wrote us, as an individual who has been unemployed since November, in response to your recent caller's opinion that if the workers don't like it, there are plenty of other jobs, I would like to say there are not. The majority of the positions that I have seen have been part-time or fluctuating hours. In my past experience as a part-time worker, I have found very few employers flexible enough to allow workers to accommodate two part-time jobs. I'll give you a minute or so to tell me what you think of both of those points. Professor
Well, I think
Golden?
it pretty much sums up and captures what we've been discussing, that what's relatively new is this need for more employees to take on two jobs or to somehow cope with the underemployment that comes with relatively shorter hours jobs. There might be people that prefer this. There might be people that don't mind this. There's obviously an important subset of people that are trying to get through their daily lives, trying to exert a work ethic that we should admire and can't do it because of some of these scheduling practices. So we can't necessarily legislate directly that employees that have a conflict have have greater well-being, but we can say that they have greater rights, and all it would take is a minimum advance notice and some input from the employee side, and a lot of these practices and the downsides of them for the employees and their families can be curbed.
Professor Golden, I really appreciate your taking time to walk us through some of the background on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Professor Lonnie Golden is a professor of economics at Penn State's Abingdon College. He focuses on labor employment issues. I want to thank the public radio station WHYY in Philadelphia for making it possible for us to speak with him today. Also, thanks to Joe Squared for providing lunch. The Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday for a conversation with a trial lawyer on the art of persuading jurors. I'm Sheila Cast.